This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
Our next presenter is Anna G, professional dog trainer, guide dog mobility instructor, certified orientation and mobility specialist for forward-thinking dog training. And her topic today is baby steps, setting your dog up for success. Thanks, Anna.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for hanging in there and not escaping after morning tea. That's fantastic. So, yes, my name, if anyone wants to pronounce it, it's Anna Gigliotti-Scret, but Anna G is totally fine. So, I've seen a lot of familiar faces. I'm really grateful to be here. It's great to catch up with a lot of people that I've worked with, either in my time at Seeing Eye Dogs or at Guide Dogs Victoria, or new people that I'm meeting this weekend as well. I also like to pay my respects and my gratitude to the Turrbal people of Brisbane. Another note on who I am is my pronouns are she and her. Now, I did do my Seeing Eye Dog cadetship in 2009, and I was working for Vision Australia prior to that as well as after that, so I was there for over 10 years. I also studied as an O&M back in 2002, and I've done some work at Guide Dogs Vic and also Guide Dogs SA, but in 2019 I moved from Melbourne to Adelaide and started working independently. And through that work, I've been doing some pet dog training, I've been doing O&M work, it's been very diverse. I have been working as a guide dog instructor independently with some individuals, including some who may be here. So the kind of stuff that we have done together, so there's a bit of a long intro and I'll promise I'll get there, but, I've worked with people as a supplement to what their dog school are doing. So on working on issues such as maybe dog distraction or on barking, I've had discussions with people as maybe we can start teaching their dogs some hearing tasks. So, alerting to the smoke detector. That's all in the context of keeping that guide dog foundation skills running, making sure that people are safe as a priority, and making sure that the school is continuing to provide, their annual follow-ups, their regular follow-ups, aftercare, all of that. So it's really as a collaboration, and with deep respect for the organisations that are supplying these dogs and maintaining their ongoing care with you. So for me, my dog training journey has taken me along a big shift in philosophy different methodologies that I used and learnt when I first started into extending that knowledge now. And as science and research develop, we're recognising a lot of differences or things that we previously thought of animals as being automatons and not being recognised for having emotion. We're certainly recognising that, of course, everyone in this room, if they've, had a relationship with the dog, you will know that they're not a robot. They're their own unique personality with their own feelings. But in saying that, I've done a lot of study and learning, and so I understand that maybe I'll be throwing a lot of new ideas and concepts into the space right now. So if I go a little bit fast or there's not time to ask all the questions at the end, you can contact me and ask me directly if you see me around here. We can have a thread on the DGHA Facebook page if that's useful, or you can call, phone or email directly. So why did I choose this topic, baby steps setting up our dogs and children for success? Previously, when I was doing client training with Seeing Eye Dogs and Guide Dogs, we didn't really discuss children much and the interactions that we would have with our dogs. And of course, as I mentioned, we now know a lot more about our dog emotions. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I'm going to talk a bit about dog body language and also something that we call consent testing. And I'll explain that more later. We'll chat about what happens when you meet a child out and about or when they're visiting your home, or maybe children that are living with you in your home, your kids or family's kids. This topic is really all to prevent a bite or an injury or undesirable interactions that might include your dog becoming fearful or worried or avoidant. So previously what we've been told is that your dog is in harness and they can't be touched. So that's great, but what happens when they do get touched? You know, that still doesn't give us the full bit of information as what to do. Another thing we've been told is that our dog must sit and then invite someone to approach the dog to touch. Now, that doesn't take into account the feelings of the dog. So if your dog is feeling uncomfortable or excitable, we're still putting them in a situation where something or someone is approaching our dog while they're sitting, which is not ideal. And so I'd like to ask you all just to really consider your dog's needs first. They do have emotions. They do feel fear and anxiety or maybe excessive friendliness. There's also there's times when, you know, pain and wellness might be a factor. They're pretty great, our dogs, and they're pretty good at hiding how they're feeling, you know, until they're sort of on death's door sometimes. They don't let us know. So just being aware, you know, do they have a headache? Do they have some arthritis? Are their hips feeling sore? You know, they might not be letting us know about that, but that can certainly influence how they respond to a situation. So, you know, they might have a different response according to what environment they are in. Maybe in an environment like this conference is a very hard place. Like, I think your dogs are doing fantastic. It's amazing how well they're doing because this is a really challenging space for them. There's a lot of tight spaces. And now if a kid came running up to them and they're not 100% sure about it, you know, maybe we'll get some big responses or reactions because we've already got that, you know, that stress in place. How your dog is feeling at the time, so how well they're feeling. Think about who is present. So, you know, depending on how old the child is, your dog might have a different response, or how many children there are, or what way did the child approach, and what kind of things have occurred before the interaction occurs. So, first I'll talk a bit about our dog body language and stress signals. So sometimes we might recognise our dog when they're stressed, but we, so I'll go through a few bits and pieces that they might show and what we may or may not recognise. Lip licking, so it might be tongue flicks. You might see a little flash of pink as they flick their tongue out, or you might hear that sound of them licking their lips. Now, if that happens after they've eaten a treat, then it's probably that they're licking their lips because they've eaten something. That's right. If you see a dog up ahead or a child up ahead and you hear your dog licking their lips, maybe your dog is saying, oh, I'm not quite sure about this situation. So that's a really subtle sign that might be missed, but it's worth knowing about. Another one that, you know, just in case it hasn't been explained to you, this is one that you might, if you've got some vision, might see in photographs more than on your dog in real life at the time. But it's something that we call whale eye. So the way the human eye looks is quite different to how the dog eye looks. So when we're looking straight on, you can see the sclera, the white of our eye, on both sides of our iris. For our dog, if they're looking straight on, you can just see the iris. So you can just see that brown of the eye. But if they look their eyeball sideways, you can see a little bit of white. And that's what we refer to as whale eye. So it might be that the dog's feeling a bit uncomfortable and they're looking their eyeball away. So it's very subtle. We see it a lot. Once you learn how to see it, you see it a lot in photos of children hugging dogs. The kid is looking really happy, the dog not so much. And so, yeah, it's not a great look once you start noticing it. But of course, you know, that's something that's very subtle and of course easy to miss. Our dog's yawning. So again, if that's out of context, we might hear their little kind of squeak in the back of the yawn, or and sometimes a yawn is also a sign that our dog is not comfortable with something. If they're tired and they always yawn at that certain time, of course, you know, we're just looking for patterns, and when these behaviours are happening at a different time, or when there might be potential stresses around. A big body shake, so we call it a shake-off, like when our dogs are, you know, wet and they give themselves a big shake. Probably a lot of dogs do this when they just first get into harness, and then they just do a big shake, and that's just them settling in and you know, getting comfortable in their gear. You might notice that they do that after they've had a nap under the cafe table and get up and throw their fur all through the restaurants. And so, but you also might notice that you walk past a dog in the street, or you walk past children in the street, and after you get past, your dog does a big shake off, and that's them getting that sort of stress out of their system and trying to reset and trying to sort of get themselves back into working mode. And then there's avoidance behaviour, such as leaning away from something. Their head might turn away from it, or they might avoid something, so you could notice that. Something more subtle again is maybe if they're going from having their mouth open to suddenly closing their mouth. So that might be them kind of almost like taking a bit of a, like, I'm just going to catch my breath and hold my breath for a moment and, okay, let's keep going. So if you notice that contrast, again, you may not pick it up, but that's another thing. Change in breathing or a big exhale. So when I'm working with reactive dogs in particular, or when I'm working with a dog who's having a good sniff of something, so let's talk about the sniffing dog. They might be sniff, 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 and I just wait them out, because I'm talking about pet dogs here, and just letting them have a chance to sniff. And they've got that quick sniffing sound, and then all of it, and if I say, hey doggo, they're just not ready to listen to me at that point. If I wait them out and they satiate and they get their need met from the sniff, I might hear them go, and I think, right, that's the moment that they are switching places from what they're interested in that moment. So again, it's a really subtle thing, but it's almost, I pick that as a I'm ready to listen to you now signal. But notice what happens for your dog as well, because, you know, each dog is an individual. Each one have their different signs and their different tells. Another thing might be that they suddenly have to sniff something. So I've noticed that with one particular dog that we had a lot of trouble training in a guide dog program, because she would just lunge and sniff, and it just seemed out of the blue. And then I realised she'd spotted a dog a block away, and then she quickly suddenly just launched and sniffed. That was her displacement behaviour, that she was like, ugh, I don't like this, I'm not comfortable, what do I do instead? Oh, I'm just going to lunge and sniff. And once we realised that, we could work on it. And scratching, you know, if they do a scratch in a pattern of behaviour. So my poodle Cross at home, she has some interesting behaviours. But one of them is tail. If she gets frustrated, she might chase her tail, and then she sits, and then she scratches, and then she barks at me. So that scratch is not an I'm itchy scratch. It's a, God, I'm frustrated, I don't know what to do, I can't deal with these emotions that I've got going on. So, you know, that's her tell that she needs a bit of help and a bit of support to relax. So now we just have a think about what is okay for you and for your dog. So decide in advance what you and your dog is comfortable. Just because your mate next to you says, hey, you know, I let kids pat my dog all the time, but you're not comfortable with that, and or you know that your dog's not comfortable with that, then that's totally fine. So, you know, you need, you're the expert in your world, and you're the expert of your dog, and your dog doesn't have the voice, so that's where it's up to you to provide that. And so think about, are children ever allowed to interact with your dog, and under what circumstances? Do you have your own children? Is it your relatives have kids? Is it friends' kids? What about when you're out on the street or you're out and about? So we touched on the fact that if our dog wants to be patted, you know, we get told that we sit our dog and someone can come up and pat them. Now, there's a problem with that. With number one, as your dog ages, there might be some hip issues. So maybe sitting isn't that comfortable for them anyway. So just bear that in mind. You know, your dog might change from time to time as to what physical stuff is going on and how comfortable they are. But, you know, we've got these great, great dogs. They've been reinforced a lot for sniffing. I mean, sitting. Sorry. Yeah, that's right. So they've been reinforced heaps for sitting. They've done it a lot. They've been praised for it. They've had treats for it. They've had a lot of practice. They're expert sitters. and they can be really obedient. But if they're feeling uncomfortable, they might be sitting and responding to your cue to sit because they're so obedient, yet they're feeling conflicted inside. So we had a question about if they roll their eyes. So yeah, we often miss that. So, you know, sitting, asking your dog to sit while someone approaches means that it doesn't really give them the choice to move away. Also, children are kids, you know, they don't have the adult brain. They're not always aware how to interact appropriately. So, you know, they can do some weird, unpredictable stuff. We want to avoid our dogs being cornered and being unable to escape. So you might think, oh yeah, well, let's just go over near the wall. We can have a pat there, or we can ask our dog to sit by the wall in the corner because it's away from the walkways. But then we're actually cornering our dog, and it takes that choice of fleeing the situation out of their control and might make them more insecure. If a dog doesn't like what happens after they're told to sit, we might actually be punishing the sit response. So we're saying sit and then something unpleasant happens, they might be less likely to want to sit next time. If we ask them to sit and stay and then they get patted and they get up, well, we're creating an opportunity for failure. So, you know, we're again diminishing what we're asking our dogs to do rather than setting them up to succeed in that. You could add a cue. I'm not going to talk about how to sort of teach this, but one way of doing it is teaching your dog to go and say hi to someone. So you tell them, go say hi. The dog chooses to move towards someone or stays in place. You can then reward them, good dog, for saying hi, and hopefully they come back to you for their treat or their reward or their reinforcer. Or, you know, you can reward them for staying in place. When you say, hey, go say hi, and you know that your dog understands that, they can choose. Yeah, actually today I don't want to go say hi. And you go, oh, sorry people, you know, I've asked my dog, but they're not keen. Most of our guide dogs, you know, they're pretty social creatures. So, yeah, that's right, that's right. So reinforcing them coming back to you after saying hi is going to be really important if you are teaching that cue. Now I'm going to talk about trigger stacking. some of you may have heard the expression trigger stacking, and we're starting to think about the dog's emotions in this space. So the American Kennel Club has defined trigger stacking as a phenomenon in which a dog experiences multiple stressful or scary situations within a short time span. As a result, a dog may feel overwhelmed and exhibit a large reaction to an otherwise minor stress. So if your dog experiences a small stress and has time to recover, it may not appear that they've experienced any stress. You might not notice that it's been stressful because they've had the opportunity to recover from it. But then multiple stresses in a row with no time to calm down afterwards might lead to bigger reactions from your dog. So suddenly you go, hang on a sec, we've walked past 10 kids and my dog's been fine. Why did they explode on the 11th? Why did they explode on the 10th dog, right, you know, when they've been great for the first nine? That's a build-up, you know. So rather than you thinking, oh, hey, my dog should be great, they've just aced it nine times, just think about, you know, what that might be happening, you know, what might be going on for your dog, and they're just feeling a bit overwhelmed by the end. Now I'll just talk a bit about our lovely tolerant guide dogs. So we do, you know, we selectively breed tolerant dogs and gentle dogs. You know, that's what we're looking for. So our dogs might be feeling in conflict, but they may not express it. But just because they can't speak doesn't mean they're not having a reaction. And so taken from the Family Paws website or training, they've got this lovely little pithy saying, when in doubt, give them an out. So rather than when in doubt, test them, test them and see, let's see if this fails. When in doubt, give them an out. The other thing, the other limitation that if our kids are growing up with guide dogs, those little children might be learning to behave inappropriately around dogs because our lovely dogs are very tolerant. You know, they can often cope with being hugged or being pulled on or grabbed. And so then we're actually setting up our own children to be at risk of a bite or injury when they approach other dogs. So being really mindful of that, at what messaging comes through. I don't mean don't have those interactions with your children and your dog, but just being aware that if you do have children in the family, just giving them great advice and say, look, this dog is, you know, is selectively chosen for this. Not all dogs are going to be comfortable with that. Now I'm going to talk about a patting consent test. Now this is something that if you would like to, you can practice with your dog in a moment after I explain it, or if you don't want to unsettle your dog from their lovely quiet position, you don't need to. You can always practice this later at home or in your room or at different breaks, and I encourage you to practice it in different circumstances. So I'll describe it and then we'll have a go. So pick a body part of your dog that you might pat them on. It might be above their shoulders or maybe under their chin. And then pat your dog for a few seconds and then stop patting and just leave your hand next to them but not touching them. But, you know, maybe a couple of centimetres away from your dog. And so what does your dog then do? Do they come back for more? Do they nudge you? Are they insatiable? Do they, you know, do they just want pats the whole time? Or do they move their body away? Sometimes when we pat them on top of the face, you know, whether it's sort of around the muzzle or on top of the head, they actually move their head away. And sometimes we don't notice it unless we're paying attention to it. Or do they offer you somewhere else? You know, you go to pat them on the head, do they turn around and give you their butt? Do they give you their shoulder? So, you know, maybe that's your dog saying, hell yeah, I would love a pat, but just somewhere else, you know. That's not my patting scratchy spot. So if I'll give people a moment. If you wish to pat your dog, give them a little pat and then stop patting and see how you go.
Has a really bad habit of coming up to me when I've got one. So
How funny. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll have to try it. Well,
that's,
yeah.
That's really...
That's quirky.
Sorry?
That's quirky. Yeah.
It's kind of... It doesn't worry me, but it seems to be like a comfort thing for me.
Yes. Okay, guys, so we've had a little moment for that. I'll take questions at the end, but, you know, we can, yeah, so if you've got questions about that exercise, that's something you can practice, or that's something that we can, yeah, hold your questions till we get towards the end, because otherwise I'll end up rattling on for a bit too long. And so, you know, what you can do with that padding consent test, you can try it in different locations. You know, you can try it when you're at home. You can try it when you're, you know, in the morning or in the afternoon, when you're out and about, when you're stopped at a cafe, and in different places on your dog. The other thing that we want to think about is those children that we're having interactions with. So rather than just saying, yes, you can come and interact with my dog, give clear information to children. So we want children to know, don't lean over above the dog. That can overwhelm our dogs quickly and, again, give them a lack of opportunity to escape. What's better to do is set up a clear location where that child could be placed. You know, hey, why don't you sit in this chair? That keeps the kid from being unpredictable. Why don't you stand on this orange circle or this, you know, give them something that's really clear and tangible so the child knows the right place to be. And then they can invite the dog over to them to be patted. So rather than a sitting dog with tight, tense muscles, we've got a dog who's got looseness in their muscles, which it helps for relaxation, and then we've got that choice of the dog to be able to come over and be patted. And if the dog says no thank you, then we just explain. Now, kids are taught about consent at school these days. I know we never were. I never was as a young woman or a child. But kids are getting taught those messaging, which is great. And so, you know, you can sort of relate it back. Hey, look, if you don't want to have a hug from someone, you know, you don't have to. So allowing that dog to say no. Inviting kids to have their hands low and pat on the side of the dog or under the chin. Work out where your dog likes to be patted and say, hey, my dog loves a pat on his shoulder, if that's the place. And again, don't allow the dog to become cornered or closed in. Kids could be waving to the dog, wave goodbye, wave hello. They could blow a kiss. They could throw a toy or a treat if that's appropriate. And then we also want to give our clear information, like don't put your hands in their food bowl, don't disturb the dog while they're on their bed. So allowing their dog to have the bed as their safe place where they're not, you know, they're not tampered with. Now, if anyone is planning on bringing home a baby, the best way of having, you know, got a few comments, a few opinions on that. You know, we don't need close physical contact between babies and dogs. We don't need our dog to love the baby and be excited. It'd be better if the dog is neutral. Our Instagram photos, our social media, all of that stuff can be really harmful. As I said, we see lots of photos of uncomfortable dogs with very happy kids and very happy parents. You know, we've got our primate brain. We like cuddling and we're handsy. Our dogs are quite different to that. And then over time, children change. So just being aware that, you know, they start off as babies and your dog might be okay with the baby, but then, you know, the kid's crawling and then they're toddlers and they're wobbly and then they get faster and they're young children. So, you know, your dog might be okay with some of these aspects of children, but not with others. So, you know, just thinking, hey, my dog is fine with kids, it's a real spectrum of behaviour and of sort of where those developmental ages are from the children. you know, and things like what kids might do, like their grasp reflex. You know, we don't want a kid hanging on and latching to the dog's face, for instance, and the dog being threatened by that. Also, you know, if you are planning a family, you might have less time for your dog when you first have your baby. So teaching your dog beforehand is going to be really helpful so that your dog can cope with having a bit less work, having a bit less attention, maybe being separated for feedings and different times. So, you know, being proactive and being able to... to set our dogs up to cope with these things rather than having to react to something later. And so when talking to children, we want to give them all the great information that we can, even though, you know, they might not even have words yet. They might be kids who are under 1 year old. They can't speak. They might not understand. They're certainly not going to make adult decisions while they're little kids. But always talk to them as if they might understand so that we've got that good, clear messaging in place. So, you know, we can say, hey, we don't go near our dog when he's eating or sleeping. We don't expect the child to understand. We don't want to say, I told you so, and have to sort of repair some damage, but really good to start the messaging young. So that is the content of my talk today. A lot of the information I've taken has been from the Family Paws webinar and website, as well as other dog training sort of resources that I've accessed over time. Family Paws is an American organisation and they've got a great resource page with webinars. So, I mean, you might find that you've got friends or, you know, people with pet dogs that you'd be more worried about, and you can lead them to that that website. And when I reached out, I watched a webinar by them, and the woman who runs Family Paws is named Jen Shryock. And I said to her, are you happy if I talk about this topic and utilise some of the points that you've made at a dog guide handlers conference? And she said, yes, I've actually got a vision impairment myself. So I thought that was a pretty special sort of little moment that there was that connection there. So I'm Anna, I'm from forwardthinkingdogtraining.com.au, and we can take some questions.
Also mentioned tomorrow's workshop.
Yeah, I've got it on my screen too.
It's really slimy.
While we're waiting for the microphone to go around, I'll just mention that I am running a workshop tomorrow. A few people have signed up. So we've got all the working places that are booked, but we do have positions for people to observe and listen. So everything will be explained. The workshop's called How Dogs Say Yes. It's around training consent behaviours and foundations to support handling or possible medicating and care needs. So, does that describe it?
Yep.
Excellent. So if people want to sign up, you know, it's unlimited in terms of how many auditing positions there are, and that's from 10 till 12 tomorrow morning.
Where?
I think it's in here.
I think it's in this room, yeah. I will confirm that, but I'm pretty sure it's in this room.
We can confirm that in our later announcements, and we'll find out today.
Thanks, Anna. It's Katie here with the mic. I got it working. Really love that presentation. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And it's something I'm really conscious of, and I find Sadie's an awesome communicator. And I often find she's telling me things about other dogs. So, you know, when there's a positive response to another dog, it, you know, might be in this environment where she's like, oh, all my friends. But in other circumstances, I'll notice that most of the time she just walks past dogs and I don't even know. But if a dog's aggressive, I notice that she will actively pull me away and move around the dog with a good amount of distance, which I just adore that she's so good at that kind of thing. So I just wanted to throw that in because it's really cool to watch what they're telling us in their everyday work.
That's fantastic, and fantastic that you're listening to your dog, and also, you know, makes me think that, you know, to add, sometimes our dogs are conflicted, so they're showing us a mixture of stuff, and you think, hey, my dog's wiggling and wagging their tail, but then they bounce forward and then they bounce back, or then they give a woof or something. So sometimes we can get this really blurry stuff, you know, it's not black and white, it's, you know, there's a lot of grey areas, just like for us. You know, it's very similar.
Yeah. And my question was, I did the pat consent test with Sadie just now, and she took my pats, but then she went over to Stacey and said, I'll have a pat from you, Stacey. So does that mean my pats aren't good enough?
Definitely, you have to go back to patting school. No, I think, you know, novelty is really important. You know, they're social creatures, and she just said, oh, hey, I can get pats from Katie later, but maybe I can't get pats from everyone else later, so I'll take my opportunity now. That's my guess. We can't know exactly what she's thinking.
Hi, Anna. Two of my three dogs have been Labrador Retrievers. My first dog used to always roll her eyes to the top of her head every time I talked about her being very naughty, particularly food distracted. Oh, my goodness. My current dog is, we've been together about 9 months, has just suddenly started, and she's... He's just over 2 years now. He's just started to give quite strong kisses on the face, on the lips or on the eyes or cheeks and things, not only to me but to other people. How do I stop that, and why has it suddenly started? It's only been happening about the last few weeks.
I guess I can't necessarily diagnose without seeing the situation. So unfortunately, I don't have a clear answer. I think it's worth thinking about, okay, what's changed, you know? So thinking about what's my dog's age? Are they going through, you know, age milestones or anything? Oh, yes, terrible twos. We often see behaviour change around that sort of 18-month to two-year-old phase. And you know, it might be something that sort of, when we think about behaviour, something motivates behaviour, and then consequences, so what happens after the behaviour, is going to depend on whether that behaviour is repeated or maintained. So think about, you know, what are the dog's needs? Why are they asking for that? And what's maintaining it? Are there things I can set up to, you know, if I don't want this behaviour to happen, how can I get in there early rather than waiting for it to happen and get practised and get that sort of well-worn path trodden into into their behaviour repertoire? Then, you know, what other things can I do instead? So, yeah, well, without sort of seeing it, I can't say what's going on, though. But thank you.
Yeah, hi. So I'm just wondering, something I noticed with my dog, and by the way, she loved her pat when I did the test as well. She thought it was quite good. She sort of nudged me. But I'm wondering if... So I noticed that if I'm feeling stressed or whatever, my dog, all of a sudden, she will bark more than normal. So if I'm home and if I'm having a really bad day or I've got a bit of anxiety or something, she just goes off a tree. She just starts barking up a storm. And I'm wondering, like, if there's something, you know, she's obviously picking up on my stress levels or whatever. So obviously, you know, what can I do to, like, support her and, like, helping her sort of feel a bit more calmer, you know?
Yeah, very interesting observation. I guess it's another one of those ones that without seeing the situation and seeing what else is triggering the barking, because I imagine that she's not barking non-stop, but maybe she's more likely to bark at things when you're stressed, whether she's noticing, whether she's noticing with her wonderful sense of smell that you've got more stress hormones pumping through and she's responding to that. Whether she's noticing your change in behaviours, you know, if you're stressed, are you doing things a bit differently either in your interactions with her or your movement around the house? So there could be quite a few things, but if you think that she's barking and feeling distressed, then think about what things help her become calm. So is doing some massage or some settle on her mat or doing a few minutes of training with treats or have a little playtime just to get that out of her body. So working out what works for her. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jeanette and Hayley's my four-legged fur baby. When I'm out with my support workers and we've stopped, Hayley actually puts herself in front of both of us. It's like she's protecting us from people from getting too close to us, which kind of is a really good thing for me, but I'm just wondering what's going on in her head. But when it comes to children, if a child yells out puppy, usually Hayley will stop and sit and the mother or father will bring the child up and I'll just say, okay, not allowed to touch, and because she helps me to see. But if you put your hand out, she's allowed to touch you. And usually she will lick their hand. So they're not actually giving her a pat. But she's actually recognising them.
That's lovely, yeah. And some, you know, I know that a lot of assistance dogs are taught to work as a buffer between crowds or, you know, strangers. So, you know, for someone with PTSD in particular, you know, they might be utilising their assistance dog to be a buffer between them and crowds. We don't know what's going on through her head. So, you know, as much as I say that they can express emotions and sometimes we can be fairly certain what's going on, we also really can't know what's motivating that behaviour.
She's putting herself between me and the world and she's kind of protecting me from people coming too close to us.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, again, you know, I'm not sure whether it could be a protection-related behaviour or whether she, you know, or what sort of motivates that. Okay, we've still got time for more.
We've got time for one more question.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Anna. So that was a fascinating presentation. Really enjoyed it. Great presentation. I'm with Vixen now. She's my fifth dog. So my first dog I trained back in 1995. And I've seen quite a transformational change in from my first dog training to the fifth dog training, in relationship to the trainers being more about you and your life and what you need and how the dog is going to help you and support you to live your life. But what you presented today, when I had my first dog, I had two very, very... Oh, I didn't actually have a kid, but I had my children during my first dog and my second dog. They were quite young. It'd be great. We've got guide dogs and seeing eye dogs and Stapleton all here today. Is how we can make sure that's well integrated into our training models, because it's still understanding the dog as part of a family unit. So I know the focus is very much on the handler and the dog with the training, but I still think it would be really valuable, because as what you've described, Anna, the dog is coming back into a family, and how do we ensure those emotional elements of the dog are well protected and there isn't any negative outcomes or adverse outcomes when the dog's coming back into the family. So I think it's a really great thing for the schools to consider as part of their, I guess, training, particularly new handlers with dogs, but even more advanced handlers with dogs, how that's integrated into the training. Thanks, Anna. That was fantastic.
You're welcome. And I'll just talk to that in that... you know, our world of information has opened up so much in the past couple of decades, you know. So what we would do traditionally in a guide dog school would be, you know, teaching new instructors or teaching things based on what we'd been, I suppose, feeding that information down from generation to generation of instructors. Now with the internet and with more global travel, we've got access to so much more information, and so there's stacks and stacks of changes that are coming in. That's why I thought it was an important topic to share today, because it was something that wasn't covered when I was at the organisations. Now, I've been out of the organisations for the past 4 years, so what's there now? Or what, you know, if you guys have an 8-year-old dog versus if you're getting a dog today, you might be getting taught quite different things as well. But I'd encourage you, if there are gaps in any element, speak to your organisations and say, hey, look, you know, I've heard about this. Does that apply to our dogs? How, you know, can we find out about this? They might be able to run, you know, workshops or upskilling or have telelinks or other things. So I'd encourage you to speak to the organisations. I'm happy to work with organisations if they, you know, wanted to hire me. But the information is out there. So it's excellent.
Thanks, Anna. I'd like to do that pet test with Carly, except I know what she'd do is go straight onto her back wanting tummy rubs. Here's a little appreciation for us. Enjoy.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Anna.
Thanks,
everyone.
This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?